Tull. So they finally got Anse to say what he wanted to do, and him and the gal and the boy got out of the wagon. But even when we were on the bridge, Anse kept on looking back, like he thought maybe once he was out in the wagon, the whole thing would kind of blow up, and he would find himself back yonder in the field again, and her laying up there in the house, waiting to die, and it to do all over again. "You ought to let them take in your mule," he says, and the bridge shaking and swaying under us, going down into the moiling water like it went clean through to the other side of the earth, and the other end coming up out in the water like it wasn't the same bridge at all, and that them that would walk up out in the water on that side must come from the bottom of the earth. But it was still whole. You could tell that by the way when this end swagged. It didn't look like the other end swagged at all. Just like the other trees in the bank yonder were swinging back and forth slow like on a big clock. And them logs scraping and bumping at the sunk part, and tilting end up and shooting clean out in the water, and tumbling on toward the ford and the waiting, slick, whirling, and foamy. "What good would that have done?" I says. "If your team can't find the ford and haul it across, what good would 3 mules or even 10 mules do?" "I ain't asking it of you," he says. "I can always do for me and mine. I ain't asking you to risk your mule. But ain't your dead. I am not blaming you." "They ought to went back and laid over until tomorrow," I says. The water was cold. It was thick like slush ice. Only it kind of lived. One part of you knowed it was just water, the same thing that had been running under the same bridge for a long time. Yet when them logs would come spewing up out in it, you were not surprised, like they was a part of water, of the waiting and the threat. It was like when we was across, up out of the water again and the hard earth under us, that I was surprised. It was like we hadn't expected the bridge to end on the other bank, on something tame like the hard earth again that we had tromped on before this time and knowed well. Like it couldn't be me here, because I'd have had better sense than to done what I just done. And when I looked back and saw the other bank and saw my mule standing there where I used to be and knew that I'd have to get back there some way, I knew it couldn't be, because I just couldn't think of anything that could make me cross that bridge ever even once. Yet here I was, and the fellow that could make himself cross it twice couldn't be me, not even if Cora told him to. It was that boy. I said, "Here, you better take a hold of my hand," and he waited and held to me. I'd be derned if it wasn't like he'd come back and got me. Like he was saying, "They won't nothing hurt you." Like he was saying about a fine place he knowed where Christmas come twice with Thanksgiving and lasts on through the winter and the spring and the summer, and if I just stayed with him, I'd be all right too. When I looked back at my mule, it was like he was one of these here spyglasses, and I could look at him standing there and see all the broad land and my house sweated out in it like it was the more the sweat, the broader the land. The more the sweat, the tighter the house, because it would take a tight house for Cora, to hold Cora like a jar of milk in the spring. You've got to have a tight jar, or you'll need a powerful spring. So if you have a big spring, why then you have the incentive to have tight, well-made jars, because it is your milk, sour or not, because you would rather have milk that will sour than to have milk that won't, because you are a man. And him holding to my hand, his hand that hot and confident, so that I was like to say, "Look a-here, can't you see that mule yonder? He never had no business over here, so he never come. not being nothing but a mule. Because a fellow can see ever now and then that children have more sense than him. But he don't like to admit it to them until they have beards. After they have a beard, they are too busy because they don't know if they'll ever quite make it back to where they were in sense before they was haired. So you don't mind admitting then to folks that are worrying about the same thing that ain't worth the worry that you are yourself. Then we was over, and we stood there, looking at Cash turning the wagon around. We watched them drive back down the road to where the trail turned off into the bottom. After a while, the wagon was out of sight. "We better get on down to the fort and get ready to help," I said. "I give her my word," Aunt says. "It is sacred on me. I know you begrudge it, but she will bless you in heaven." "Well, they got to finish circumventing the land before they can dare the water," I said. "Come on." "It's the turning back," he said. "It ain't no luck in turning back." He was standing there, humped, mournful, looking at the empty road beyond the swaggin' and swaying bridge. And that gal, too, with the lunch basket on one arm and that package under the other. Just going to town. Bent on it. They would risk the fire and the earth and the water and all just to eat a sack of bananas. "You ought to laid over a day," I said. "It would have fell some by morning. It mought not a rain tonight, and it can't get no higher." "I give my promise," he says. "She is counting on it."
Darl. Before us the thick, dark current runs. It talks up to us in a murmur, becomes ceaseless and myriad. The yellow surface dimpled monstrously into fading swirls, traveling along the surface for an instant, silent, impermanent, and profoundly significant, as though just beneath the surface something huge and alive waked for a moment of lazy alertness out of and into light slumber again. It clucks and murmurs among the spokes and about the mule's knees, yellow, scummed with flotsam and with thick soiled gouts of foam as though it had sweat, lathering like a driven horse. Through the undergrowth it goes with a plaintive sound, a musing sound. In it, the unwinded cane and saplings lean as before a little gale, swaying without reflections, as though suspended on invisible wires from the branches overhead. Above the ceaseless surface they stand, trees, cane, vines, rootless, severed from the earth, spectral above a scene of immense yet circumscribed desolation, filled with the voice of the waste and mournful water. Cash and I sit in the wagon. Jules sits the horse at the off-rear wheel. The horse is trembling, its eye rolling wild and baby blue in its long pink face, its breathing stertorous like groaning. He sits erect, poised, looking quietly and steadily and quickly this way and that, his face calm, a little pale, alert. Cash's face is also gravely composed. He and I look at one another with long, probing looks, looks that plunge unimpeded through one another's eyes and into the ultimate secret place where for an instant Cash and Darl crouch flagrant and unabashed in all the old terror and the old foreboding, alert and secret and without shame. When we speak, our voices are quiet, detached. "I reckon we're still in the road, all right." "Tull taken and cut them two big white oaks. I heard tell how at high water, in the old days, they used to line up the ford by them trees. I reckon he did that 2 years ago when he was logging down here. I reckon he never thought that anybody would ever use this ford again." "I reckon not. Yes, it must have been then. He cut a side of timber out in here then. Paid off that mortgage with it, I hear tell. Yes. Yes, I reckon so. I reckon Vernon could have done that.
That's a fact. Most folks that logs in this here country, they need a darn good farm to support the sawmill. Or maybe a store. But I reckon Vernon could.
I reckon so. He's a sight.
Aye, Vernon is. Yes, it must still be here. He never would have got that timber out of here if he hadn't cleaned out that old road. I reckon we are still on it.
He looks about quietly at the position of the trees, leaning this way and that, looking back along the floorless road shaped vaguely high in air by the position of the lopped and felled trees, as if the road, too, had been soaked free of earth and floated upward, to leave in its spectral tracing a monument to a still more profound desolation than this above which we now sit, talking quietly of old security and old trivial things. Jewel looks at him, then at me. Then his face turns in that quiet, constant questing about the scene, the horse trembling quietly and steadily between his knees.
He could go on ahead slow and sort of feel it out, I say.
Yes, Cash says, not looking at me. His face is in profile as he looks forward where Jewel has moved on ahead.
He can't miss the river, I say. He couldn't miss seeing it 50 yards ahead.
Cash does not look at me, his face in profile.
If I just suspicioned it, I could have come down last week and taken a sight on it.
The bridge was up then, I say.
He does not look at me.
Whitfield crossed it a horseback.
Jewel looks at us again, his expression sober and alert and subdued. His voice is quiet.
What do you want me to do?
I ought to come down last week and taken a sight on it, Cash says.
We couldn't have known, I say. There wasn't any way for us to know.
I'll ride on ahead, Jewel says. You can follow where I am.
He lifts the horse. It shrinks, bowed. He leans to it, speaking to it, lifting it forward almost bodily. It's setting its feet down with gingerly splashings, trembling, breathing harshly. He speaks to it, murmurs to it.
Go on, he says. I ain't gonna let nothing hurt you. Go on now.
Jewel, Cash says. Jewel does not look back. He lifts the horse on.
He can swim, I say. If he'll just give the horse time, anyhow.
When he was born, he had a bad time of it. Ma would sit in the lamplight, holding him on a pillow on her lap. We would wake and find her so. There would be no sound from them.
That pillow was longer than him, Cash says.
He is leaning a little forward.
I ought to come down last week and sighted. I ought to done it.
That's right, I say. Neither his feet nor his head would reach the end of it.
You couldn't have known, I say.
I ought to done it, he says.
He lifts the reins. The mules move into the traces. The wheels murmur alive in the water. He looks back and down at Addie.
It ain't on a balance, he says.
At last the trees open. Against the open river, Jewel sits the horse, half-turned, it belly-deep now. Across the river we can see Vernon and Pa and Vardaman and Dewey Dell. Vernon is waving at us, waving us further downstream.
We are too high up, Cash says.
Vernon is shouting too, but we cannot make out what he says for the noise of the water. It runs steady and deep now, unbroken, without sense of motion until a log comes along, turning slowly.
Watch it, Cash says.
We watch it and see it falter and hang for a moment, the current building up behind it in a thick wave, submerging it for an instant before it shoots up and tumbles on.
There it is, I say.
Aye, Cash says. It's there.
We look at Vernon again. He is now flapping his arms up and down. We move on downstream, slowly and carefully, watching Vernon. He drops his hands.
This is the place, Cash says. Well, goddammit, let's get across then,
Jewel says. He moves the horse on.
You wait, Cash says.
Jewel stops again.
Well, by God, he says.
Cash looks at the water. Then he looks back at Addie.
It ain't on a balance, he says. Then go on back to the goddamn bridge and walk across, Jewel says. You and Darl both. Let me on that wagon.
Cash does not pay him any attention.
It ain't on a balance, he says.
Yes, sir. We got to watch it.
Watch it, hell, Jewel says. You get out of that wagon and let me have it. By God, if you're afraid to drive it over.
His eyes are pale as two bleached chips in his face. Cash is looking at him.
We'll get it over, he says. I tell you what you do. You ride on back and walk across the bridge and come down the other bank and meet us with the rope. Vernon'll take your horse home with him and keep it till we get back.
You go to hell,
Jewel says. You take the rope and come down the bank and be ready with it, Cash says.
Three can't do no more than two can, one to drive and one to steady it.
God damn you,
Jewel says. Let Jewel take the end of the rope and cross upstream of us and brace it, I say.
Will you do that, Jewel?
Jewel watches me, hard. He looks quick at Cash, then back at me, his eyes alert and hard.
I don't give a damn, just so we do something. Sitting here not lifting a goddamn hand.
Let's do that, Cash, I say.
I reckon we'll have to, Cash says.
The river itself is not 100 yards across, and Pa and Vernon and Vardaman and Dewey Dell are the only things in sight not of that single monotony of desolation leaning with that terrific quality a little from right to left, as though we had reached the place where the motion of the wasted world accelerates just before the final precipice. Yet they appear dwarfed. It is as though the space between us were time, an irrevocable quality. It is as though time, no longer running straight before us in a diminishing line, now runs parallel between us like a looping string, the distance being the doubling accretion of the thread, and not the interval between. The mules stand, their forequarters already sloped a little, their rumps high. They too are breathing now with a deep groaning sound. Looking back once, their gaze sweeps across us, with in their eyes a wild, sad, profound, and despairing quality, as though they had already seen in the thick water the shape of the disaster which they could not speak and we could not see. Cash turns back into the wagon. He lays his hands flat on Addie, rocking her a little. His face is calm, downsloped, calculant, concerned. He lifts his box of tools and wedges it forward under the seat. Together we shove Addie forward, wedging her between the tools and the wagon bed. Then he looks at me.
No, I say. I reckon I'll stay. Might take both of us.
From the toolbox he takes his coiled rope and carries the end twice around the seat stanchion and passes the end to me without tying it. The other end he pays out to Jewel, who takes a turn about his saddle horn. He must force the horse down into the current. It moves, high-kneed, arch-necked, boring and chafing. Jewel sits lightly forward, his knees lifted a little. Again, his swift, alert, calm gaze sweeps upon us and on. He lowers the horse into the stream, speaking to it in a soothing murmur. The horse slips, goes under to the saddle, surges to its feet again, the current building up against Jewel's thighs.
Watch yourself, Cash says. I'm on it now, Jewel says. You can come ahead now.
Cash takes the reins and lowers the team carefully and skillfully into the stream. I felt the current take us, and I knew we were on the ford by that reason, since it was only by means of that slipping contact that we could tell that we were in motion at all. What had once been a flat surface was now a succession of troughs and hillocks lifting and falling about us, shoving at us, teasing at us with light, lazy touches in the vain instants of solidity underfoot. Cash looked back at me, and then I knew that we were gone. But I did not realize the reason for the rope until I saw the log. It surged up out of the water and stood for an instant upright upon that surging and heaving desolation, like Christ. "Get out and let the current take you down to the bend," Cash said. "You can make it all right." "No," I said. "I'd get just as wet that way as this." The log appears suddenly between two hills, as if it had rocketed suddenly from the bottom of the river. Upon the end of it, a long gout of foam hangs like the beard of an old man or a goat. When Cash speaks to me, I know that he has been watching it all the time, watching it and watching Jewel 10 feet ahead of us. "Let the rope go," he says. With his other hand, he reaches down and reeves the two turns from the stanchion. "Ride on, Jewel," he says. "See if you can pull us ahead of the log." Jewel shouts at the horse. Again he appears to lift it bodily between his knees. He is just above the top of the ford, and the horse has a purchase of some sort, for it surges forward, shining wetly half out of water, crashing on in a succession of lunges. It moves unbelievably fast. By that token, Jewel realizes at last that the rope is free, for I can see him sawing back on the reins, his head turned, as the log rears in a long, sluggish lunge between us, bearing down upon the team. They see it too. For a moment, they also shine black out of water. Then the downstream one vanishes, dragging the other with him. The wagon shears crosswise, poised on the crest of the ford as the log strikes it, tilting it up and on. Cash is half-turned, the reins running taut from his hand and disappearing into the water, the other hand reached back upon Addie, holding her jammed over against the high side of the wagon. "Jump clear," he says quietly. "Stay away from the team and don't try to fight it. It'll swing you into the bend all right." "You come too," I say. Vernon and Vardaman are running along the bank. Pa and Dewey Dell stand watching us. Dewey Dell with the basket and the package in her arms. Jewel is trying to fight the horse back. The head of one mule appears, its eyes wide. It looks back at us for an instant, making a sound almost human. The head vanishes again. "Back, Jewel!" Cash shouts. "Back, Jewel!" For another instant, I see him leaning to the tilting wagon, his arm braced back against Addie and his tools. I see the bearded head of the rearing log strike up again, and beyond it Jewel holding the horse upreared, its head wrenched around, hammering its head with his fist. I jump from the wagon on the downstream side. Between two hills, I see the mules once more. They roll up out of the water in succession, turning completely over, their legs stiffly extended, as when they had lost contact with the earth.
Vardaman. Cash tried, but she fell off, and Dar jumped going under. He went under, and Cash hollering to catch her, and I hollering, running and hollering, and Dewey Dell hollering at me, "Vardaman, you, Vardaman, you, Vardaman," and Vernon passed me because he was seeing her come up, and she jumped into the water again, and Dar hadn't caught her yet. He came up to see, and I hollering, "Catch her, doll, catch her," and he didn't come back because she was too heavy. He had to go on catching at her, and I hollering, catch her, doll," because in the water she could go faster than a man, and doll had to grapple for her, so I knew he could catch her because He is the best grabbler, even with the mules in the way again. They dived up, rolling their feet stiff, rolling down again, and their backs up now. And Dahl had to again, because in the water she could go faster than a man or a woman. And I passed Vernon, and he wouldn't get in the water and help Dahl. He wouldn't grabble for her with Dahl. He knew, but he wouldn't help. The mules dived up again, diving their legs stiff, their stiff legs rolling slow, and then Dahl again, and I hollering, "Catch her, Dahl, catch her, head her into the bank, Dahl," and Vernon wouldn't help, and then Dahl dodged past the mules where he could. He had her under the water, coming into the bank, coming in slow, because in the water she fought to stay under the water. But Dahl is strong, and he was coming in slow, and so I knew he had her because he came slow, and I ran down into the water to help. And I couldn't stop hollering because Dahl was strong and steady holding her under the water. Even if she did fight, he would not let her go. He was seeing me, and he would hold her, and it was all right now. It was all right now. It was all right. Then he comes up out of the water. He comes a long way up slow before his hands do, but he's got to have her, got to, so I can bear it. Then his hands come up and all of him above the water. I can't stop. I have not got time to try. I will try to when I can, but his hands came empty out of the water, emptying away. "Where is Ma, Dahl?" I said. "You never got her. You knew she is a fish, but you let her get away. You never got her. Dahl. Dahl. Dahl." I began to run along the bank, watching the mules dive up slow again, and then down again. Tull. When I told Cora how Dahl jumped out of the wagon and left Cash sitting there trying to save it, and the wagon turning over, and Jewel that was almost to the bank fighting that horse back where it had more sense than to go, she says, "And you're one of the folks that says Dahl is the queer one, the one that ain't bright, and him the only one of them that had sense enough to get off that wagon. I noticed Ance was too smart to been on it at all. He couldn't have done no good if he had been there," I said. "They was going about it right, and they would have made it if it hadn't have been for that log." "Log fiddlesticks," Cora said. "It was the hand of God." "Then how can you say it was foolish?" I said. "Nobody can't guard against the hand of God. It would be sacrilege to try to." "Then why dare it?" Cora says. "Tell me that." "Ants didn't," I said. "That's just what you faulted him for." "His place was there," Cora said. "If he had been a man, he would have been there instead of making his sons do what he dursn't." "I don't know what you want then," I said. "One breath you say they was there in the hand of God to try it, and the next breath you jump on Ants because he wasn't with them." Then she began to sing again, working at the washtub, with that singing look in her face like she had done give up folks and all their foolishness, and had done went on ahead of them, marching up the sky, singing. The wagon hung for a long time while the current built up under it, shoving it off the ford, and Cash leaning more and more, trying to keep the coffin braced so it wouldn't slip down and finish tilting the wagon over. Soon as the wagon got tilted good, to where the current could finish it, the log went on. It headed around the wagon and went on good as a swimming man could have done. It was like it had been sent there to do a job, and done it, and went on. When the mules finally kicked loose, it looked for a minute like maybe Cash would get the wagon back. It looked like him and the wagon wasn't moving at all, and just Jewel fighting that horse back to the wagon. Then that boy passed me, running and hollering at Darl, and the gal trying to catch him. And then I see the mules come rolling slow up out of the water, their legs spraddled stiff like they had balked upside down, and roll on into the water again. Then the wagon tilted over, and then it and Jewel and the horse was all mixed up together. Cash went out in sight, still holding the coffin braced, and then I couldn't tell anything for the horse lunging and splashing. I thought that Cash had give up then and was swimming for it, and I was yelling at Jewel to come on back, and then all of a sudden him and the horse went under too, and I thought they was all going. I knew that the horse had got dragged off the ford too, and with that wild drowning horse and that wagon and that loose box, it was going to be pretty bad. And there I was, standing knee-deep in the water, yelling at ants behind me, "See what you done now? See what you done now?" The horse come up again. It was headed for the bank now, throwing its head up, and then I saw one of them holding to the saddle on the downstream side, so I started running along the bank, trying to catch sight of Cash because he couldn't swim, yelling at Jewel where Cash was, like a dern fool, bad as that boy that was on down the bank still hollering at Darl. So I went down into the water so I could still keep some kind of a grip in the mud when I saw Jewel. He was middle deep, so I knew he was on the ford anyway, leaning hard upstream. And then I see the rope, and then I see the water building up where he was holding the wagon and snubbed just below the ford. So it was Cash holding to the horse when it comes splashing and scrambling up the bank, moaning and groaning like a natural man. When I come to it, it was just kicking Cash loose from his holt on the saddle. His face turned up a second when he was sliding back into the water. It was gray, with his eyes closed and a long swipe of mud across his face. Then he let go and turned over in the water. He looked just like a old bundle of clothes kind of washing up and down against the bank. He looked like he was laying there in the water on his face, rocking up and down a little, looking at something on the bottom. We could watch the rope cutting down into the water, and we could feel the weight of the wagon kind of blump and lunge lazy-like, like it just as soon as not, and that rope cutting down into the water hard as an iron bar. We could hear the water hissing on it like it was red-hot. Like it was a straight iron bar stuck into the bottom and us holding the end of it. And the wagon lazing up and down, kind of pushing and prodding at us, like it had come around and got behind us, lazy-like, like it just as soon as not when it made up its mind. There was a shote come by, blowed up like a balloon. One of them spotted shotes of Long Quick's. It bumped against the rope like it was an iron bar and bumped off and went on, and us watching that rope slanting down into the water. We watched it.
Darl. Cash lies on his back on the earth, his head raised on a rolled garment. His eyes are closed, his face is gray, his hair plastered in a smooth smear across his forehead, as though done with a paintbrush. His face appears sunken a little, sagging from the bony ridges of eye sockets, nose, gums, as though the wetting had slacked the firmness which had held the skin full. His teeth, set in pale gums, are parted a little, as if he had been laughing quietly. He lies pole-thin in his wet clothes, a little pool of vomit at his head, and a thread of it running from the corner of his mouth and down his cheek, where he couldn't turn his head quick or far enough, until Dewey Dell stoops and wipes it away with the hem of her dress. Jewel approaches. He has the plane. "Vernon just found the square," he says. He looks down at Cash, dripping too. "Ain't he talked none yet?" "He had his saw and hammer and chalk line and rule," I say. "I know that." Jewel lays the square down. Pa watches him. "They can't be far away," Pa says. "It all went together. Was there e'er a such misfortunate man?" Jewel does not look at Pa. "You better call Vardaman back here," he says. He looks at Cash. Then he turns and goes away. "Get him to talk as soon as he can," he says, "so he can tell us what else there was." We return to the river. The wagon is hauled clear, the wheels chalked. Carefully, we all helped. It is as though upon the shabby, familiar, inert shape of the wagon there lingered somehow, latent yet still immediate, that violence which had slain the mules that drew it not an hour since, above the edge of the flood. In the wagon bed it lies profoundly, the long, pale planks hushed a little with wetting, yet still yellow, like gold seen through water, save for two long, muddy smears. We pass it and go on to the bank. One end of the rope is made fast to a tree. At the edge of the stream, knee-deep, Vardaman stands, bent forward a little, watching Vernon with rapt absorption. He has stopped yelling, and he is wet to the armpits. Vernon is at the other end of the rope, shoulder-deep in the river, looking back at Vardaman. "Further back than that," he says. "You get back by the tree and hold the rope for me, so it can't slip." Vardaman backs along the rope to the tree, moving blindly, watching Vernon. When we come up, he looks at us once, his eyes round and a little dazed. Then he looks at Vernon again, in that posture of rapt alertness. "I got the hammer, too," Vernon says. "Looks like we ought to done already got that chalk line. It ought to floated." "Floated clean away," Jewel says. "We won't get it. We ought to find the saw, though." "I reckon so," Vernon says. He looks at the water. "That chalk line, too. What else did he have?" "He ain't talked yet," Jewel says, entering the water. He looks back at me. "You go back and get him roused up to talk," he says. "Pause there," I say. I follow Jewel into the water, along the rope. It feels alive in my hand, bellied faintly in a prolonged and resonant arc. Vernon is watching me. "You better go," he says. "You better be there." "Let's see what else we can get before it washes on down," I say. We hold to the rope, the current curling and dimpling about our shoulders. But beneath that false blandness, the true force of it leans against us lazily. I had not thought that water in July could be so cold. It is like hands molding and prodding at the very bones. Vernon is still looking back toward the bank. "Reckon it'll hold us all?" he says. We too look back, following the rigid bar of the rope as it rises from the water to the tree, and Vardaman crouched a little beside it, watching us. "Wish my mule wouldn't strike out for home," Vernon says. "Come on," Jewel says. "Let's get out in here." We submerge in turn, holding to the rope, being clutched by one another while the cold wall of the water sucks the slanting mud backward and upstream from beneath our feet, and we are suspended so, groping along the cold bottom. Even the mud there is not still. It has a chill, scouring quality, as though the earth under us were in motion too. We touch and fumble at one another's extended arms, letting ourselves go cautiously against the rope, or, erect in turn, watch the water suck and boil where one of the other two gropes beneath the surface. Pa has come down to the shore, watching us. Vernon comes up, streaming, his face sloped down into his pursed, blowing mouth. His mouth is bluish, like a circle of weathered rubber. He has the rule.
"He'll be glad of that," I say. "It's right new. He bought it just last month out of the catalog."
"If we just knowed for sure what else," Vernon says, looking over his shoulder and then turning to face where Jewel had disappeared.
"Didn't he go down for me?"
Vernon says.
"I don't know," I say. "I think so. Yes. Yes, he did."
We watched the thick, curling surface streaming away from us in slow whirls.
"Give him a pull on the rope," Vernon says.
"He's on your end of it," I say.
"Ain't nobody on my end of it," he says.
"Pull it in," I say. But he has already done that, holding the end above the water. And then we see Jewel. He is 10 yards away. He comes up, blowing, and looks at us, tossing his long hair back with a jerk of his head. Then he looks toward the bank. We can see him filling his lungs.